All the way from the 1980s to the 1990s, we celebrated here on Lethal Mullet Podcast, your place to celebrate everything from Chuck Norris to Jeff Speakman and more. All the Schwarzenegger, Stallone and Jean-Claude Van Damme films, all in one place. Brought to you by Fandom Podcast Network and hosted by The Lethal Mullet. Welcome to Lethal Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, coming to you live from Gold Coast Quinlan's Cantina. Joining me all the way from the lovely, fantastic, but cloudy London is the one, the only, Martin Wood. Mate, how you going?
G'day, mate.
No,
I'm fine, Adam. Great to speak to you, mate. Great to see you for the first time.
Awesome, awesome, man. Welcome to the show. And I bet you're having a bit of Vegemite on toast for breakfast.
Oh, you know there was sausage, bacon and egg.
Don't you guys have Marmite?
We do, and I've got a jar right here.
Very nice. Now, Martin, of course, is a great musician over in the UK and somebody who is very good friends with, of course, Dan Hadley. And, of course, on Type 40 is trolling the rest of the Doctor Who fans like I am there with, of course, Mr. Tom Baker and his wonderful ring of movies that he does.
Tom Cop. Everyone knows.
Terminator. The Terminator. Yeah. Kindergarten Tom. You know, Raw Tom. Tommy Does Dallas. No, no, but I've got to say, it has been a hell of a lot of fun. We've got a couple of people that don't get the joke, unfortunately, on there, which is, I find, absolutely hilarious. There's a couple go, I don't get it. it's an American buddy of ours. There he goes, you've done another one. Why does he keep putting these out there? You know? But at the end of the day, it's got to be done because it's hilarious and there's plenty of movies to be done yet. We've got to do Forrest Tom, yeah? Forrest Tom, we've got to do... Oh, we haven't done Brave Tom.
You'll never take a baker!
Maybe it should be baker gifts, like literally, you know, there's baker jokes out there, you never know. Look, it's got to be done. It's got to be done. But, folks, of course, great place, Spacebook. Of course, Dan Hadley's got out there. And stay tuned, folks, because Spacebook is set to expand. It's hitting YouTube. It's hitting podcasting very, very soon. In the near future, in January, you can even have a video show. So check it out, folks. You must be excited for this stuff.
Sorry, mate.
You must be excited with Spacebook.
Oh, of course, I'm excited because Facebook is a fantastic thing. It's good to see your friends doing well.
Oh, definitely.
Nice to see him doing their stuff on there.
That's right. And, of course, Dan's very entertaining when it comes to whether it's a video, podcasting, and I think he's learned a few things from the mullet when it comes to going in, throwing out the script, unlike our dear pals in the States here. Right, gosh, this is quite a few very great shows, by the way. Welcome to the show, here we go. You know, like, you know, at the end of the day, I want to like the spontaneity that you're here right now. Like, we're having a cup of coffee or a home brew, going, it's a nice lager, let's shank it.
Just on double.
Yes, there's always time for Sean because if Sean was in the Rise of Connery, Star Wars, he would be a Sith. A Sith? What is a Sith? A Sith or a Sith? I don't know. Rise of the Shitwalker. Oh, my goodness. Can't even imagine. Folks, we're going to be talking about, of course, Rambo's first film and, of course, the novel it's based on that Dave Morrell wrote. And, of course, that is First Blood. Today, and of course the new film is out, Last Blood. If you haven't seen it, you might want to go and see it on the cinemas while you can. Now, they do say this is the last Sylvester Stallone Rambo film, but he's been out in the media saying that that might not be the case. What do you reckon?
I don't think it's the last one. He's tasted more success again. I think the guy's going to come back.
I think
he's
so.
Always jumped on the bandwagon when he's found it, and if he's on the rise at the moment, you can't see him walking away from that.
Rocky, Mickey,
don't push me.
And the thing is, you know, like that's like an it's a character that's ongoing. I think you're gonna have not just Rambo, but it's gonna be other beloved characters. Like eventually, we will have a Die Hard prequel with McClane in the '70s. I reckon it's gonna happen. You know,
it's gonna be recast. Really hard.
You know, and they tried with Rian Johnson's Looper, which I quite enjoyed that film, you know, for what it is. It's
it breaks all its own rules, but it's a good film.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt, you know, is no Bruce Willis. For the film, it worked.
It worked.
Yeah, I think, you know, with whatever prosthetic they did do, it worked for what it was. But I don't know. I think go with a complete unknown if you're going to do Die Hard in Brooklyn or whatever it is.
I think Bruce is so hard to replace. I'd go with a complete unknown, somebody brand new, because you couldn't bring in somebody else that's a known face and try and replace Bruce with that.
No, you can't. I mean, like, Bruce even tried with that latest Death Wish to replace Charlie Bronson. You can't replace Charlie Bronson.
Do that.
I mean, look at the guy. Goes out, you know, kills all these psychopaths, and, you know, Charlie always had that little smile, that little glint. He never laughed. He's just like, right, I just killed a guy. You know?
Just tell he was genuinely, for like a little bit, just hard, full stop, just a hard man. And he wasn't scared of the whole thing. It was just like, yeah, this is amusing to me. I'll just kill him. Pass me the bazooka.
You know, that's the thing. You go back to Canon Films, of course, you know, with what they had built, you know, all those ninja movies and stuff like that. And there was two Charlies. There was Charlie Norris and Charlie Bronson, you know, and they either had a movie script for... I have a movie script, you know. Which one's it for? It's going in the first Charlie pile. What about the other Charlie pile? You know, and they would just literally do that all the way through. Now, what's interesting too is, you know, we're at a time where, of course, Rambo came out and was such a... I think, you know, the film needs to be taken to the merits of what it was. It was an action film. It was a bit of a survival film. And I think a bit of a character study in what it was to be a veteran and have PTSD.
Everything was really in there strong.
Oh, yeah.
And think about, to me, Die Hard itself in 88, 6 years later, was very much sort of taking the premise of what they did with First Blood, which was taking an action film, making it as realistic as they could, and then basically in a tough situation.
Yeah.
It's just they did in a building instead of in a wide open forest.
Very true. I mean, look, I think that's exactly what it was. Funny enough that Die Hard was originally going to be Commando 2, so you would have had what would have been Die Hard, but, I mean, you can't really cage Arnold Schwarzenegger in one building. I mean, it would have been a two-minute film. It would have been just John Matrix. I love Red Rogers, actually.
He had cold weather for stuck in the toilet. He was hyper.
And, I mean, who would you really have got to play Hans Gruber up against Arnie? He would have had to be, Rutger Hauer or something.
Hulk Hogan.
Oh, God. I could see that. You know, still to this day, the best element of Hulk Hogan's career, even till now, is Suburban Commando in the scene where he gets hit with a newspaper, picks up the newspaper, and he goes, whew, hits the kid in the head. You don't see it, and he goes, bullseye, smartass. But getting back to it, obviously, First Blood was a novel first written by David Merrill. Great writer, and I think the film takes so many elements from it, but getting back to the actual element of the thing itself, it is a study in what a war veteran feels coming home to a small town, in this case, and I think it portrays it, you know, quite well. What do you think?
Yeah, because it seems to do the whole thing really, the small town and the sheriff really is America, and how they were treating the GIs and that really as they came back.
That's right. You know, and I think that is the shock. And I can attest to it myself, as obviously the Australians were there in Vietnam and my own stepfather was actually there in Vietnam, was there in the Battle of Tui Tik, and a lot of other huge engagements, which would have been absolutely frightening, serving their country. And then to come home to, you know, such disrespect by the public, the humiliation, and not be recognised until they... I mean, it's, you know, these people have... and they weren't of choice. This was the days of the draft. So even if you were not supporting the war, you got drafted, too bad, you're going. That was the, you know, the thing back then. And obviously this is a study on, you know, somebody that's not just a regular, what we call a Nasho, which is a national citizen, but somebody that was a special forces soldier, in this case, Green Beret. Mm-hmm. So what do you think?
Oh, man, they say the whole thing when they bring Troutman in, you know, he's taught to eat things that make a billy goat puke, to kill things, full stop, period, to survive, period. Yeah. You know, when you've got that level of training against it, you're not going to shake it off. It's not going to happen. It very much to me is the treatment of a soldier when they come back. I think it was impressive for that sort of reason. It went beyond an action film. It did go into social commentary.
Yeah, it really did. And the thing is, you know, it goes down to the casting of, obviously, Sylvester Stallone was not the first choice for Rambo. But after Rocky...
No, the look of it, it's been about 7 years, hasn't it, they were trying to cast
him. That's right. I mean, Steve McQueen, I think even Al Pacino at one stage, Robert De Niro. I mean, you know, it would have been... A lot of those actors would have been up for it. Maybe even Harvey Keitel, who is, you know, another one that was already filming on Apocalypse Now before Martin Sheen came in. So it's interesting.
How much of a different film would it have been there?
Well, I think Martin Sheen's an accessible person because he's your window into this world. That's especially in that film. And may I say, if you haven't seen the final cut, guys, out there tonight, go out, get it. The final cut is must be, what, the third or fourth cut of this film, because there's been the redux and there's been, obviously, the theatrical cut. But this final cut of Apocalypse Now is damn near perfect cinema, so go and check it out. But, yes, I mean, Harvey Keitel's not in as accessible. There's something a bit more closed off about his performances, and I think, not to say that they're bad, they're fantastic performances, but they are character portrayals that you watch from the outside, whereas I think Martin Sheen sort of involves you more in his roles. Everything except for Spawn.
I think Steve McQueen would have been the closest to actually being a Stallone-type performance because he liked the silence and put it over with his eyes and his just actions rather than actually he'd slash words out of a script.
That's right, yeah. He would have kept it minimal, wouldn't he? You know, and I think James Coburn would have been another one that sort of at that time, like Flint and all those sorts of movies that were, I suppose they were still, what, 70s or whatever it was, or even late 60s. But, you know, you look at it, that's the kind of era.
Definite hard man character there.
Oh, definitely. And both of those, students of Bruce Lee. Interesting. Jeet Kune Do students. Now, what's interesting, too, about that, you also got Brian Dennehy, who obviously plays the law enforcement sheriff in this. And
what's the most underrated actor?
Oh, is he ever. He is one of the hardest working out there when it comes to this sort of stuff. I think, you know, you're hard-pressed to find a person who puts more into his performances. I mean, he really goes to that nth degree. One of my favourite roles he did was in the movie FX with, of course, Brian Brown.
Yeah, of course, that's one from my youth straight away there. Fantastic.
And, of course, when he played the... what was that other movie he did? I think it was called Gladiator, where he was a boxing coach.
Yeah, Gladiator was the one that I was just going to go to straight away with Cooper Gooding Jr.
That's
early
right.
days. And one of the guys out of Twin Peaks is something James Masters or something like that. I can't remember.
That's right, yeah. And I haven't seen a lot more of his stuff, but he was quite good in the role. I thought, you know, as obviously the guy being trained up to be, you know, the young flat-topped Rocky in this these films.
Rago was Rocky.
Oh yeah, definitely. But you got to look back on where Stallone was at the time as well. Obviously, Stallone had come from nothing to pretty much do, was it Death Race with David Carradine? He'd done a number of smaller roles here and there, walk-on roles, TV stuff like that. Well, yeah. And then didn't he do, what was it, Staying Alive or the Saturday Night Fever sequel?
Yeah, him doing that with his brother, doing the music.
That's right. His brothers are fantastic. I suppose you call him a jazz guitarist and just lounge singer. But, God, it's fantastic. He toured here. Oh, yeah. Frank came out here a few years ago and was doing just local gigs here and there up and down the coast of Queensland, down in New South Wales and Victoria, and did a lot of those really intimate sort of performances out there. But a lot of people don't remember that he's also an actor. He's, of course, one of the brothers in Hudson Hawk.
We both go straight for it, the Hudson Hawk.
Oh, yeah, Hudson Hawk. And I know Kevin Reitzer ain't going to be liking that too much because you don't like Hudson Hawk. And there's a few of the others that, it's either you like it or you loathe it, you know, one of those movies. I love it because I love Danny Aiello and Bruce, you know. What are we going to do, Christmas on a Tree? And they sing it, da-da-da-da-da-da, and they go through the whole thing.
How the hell do we survive that? Crashbacks must be.
And, of course, you get Jimmy Coburn in Dirty Camouflage kicking butt.
Yeah. And everyone named after a chocolate bar. Fantastic.
Oh, is it ever good?
Kit Kat, Butterfinger.
No, I thought it was fantastic. One of the other great things about, obviously, Rambo as well, too, is that they set it in a small town. So, again, it's got a kind of a perimeter of where, you know, the event's going to take place. Kind of looks like the Rocky Mountains where they are. Obviously, it's probably up near the Canadian border. But it's beautifully shot through there by Ted Kotcheff.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Now,
I've checked out some stuff, obviously, recently on it, and they were saying, it was absolutely freezing out there, and one of Stallone's, like, great sort of regrets was the fact that he was basically doing it in a tank top.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And he had that, the canvas thing that he had over him?
And he's just a tank top and then a bit of tarpaulin later on.
I mean, how would you be in the costuming department on that one? And then, you know, you got still go, I'm pumped up for this. No shirt. You know, and obviously, hey, Stallone, it's like minus 20. What are you doing? You know, like, well, it's all right. You know, but.
Apparently, he picked up a bit of acid when he was
filming
the scene. Or anything, and he just picked it up, a rotting piece of tarpaulin out of the junkyard, got the knife, cut a couple of holes in it, popped that on, and said that was the whole hassle. If they lost that, they got no replacement for it whatsoever. That was the only piece that they got.
Crazy, isn't it? I mean, you get down to it. I mean, he goes into the bush with pretty much only his knife and, you know, what he's wearing on him. But also that little, I suppose, that little compass that he's got on the top. I mean, it's a survival knife.
The knife with everything.
Oh, yeah, and the knives just got bigger in the sequels. But I think, too, what great is that, you know, they kind of, not so much in this film, but definitely in the sequels that followed, which got more theatrical with it, there was something about it, and it's funny because it's actually my mum, not my dad, that actually got me into watching First Blood. She said, this is a really good movie. You got to check it out. And I said, why is that? I mean, I was a kid at the time. She said, because what Rambo does is problem solve. It's teaching you to think outside of the book to survive. And in each movie, he does that.
You've got a cool mom.
Oh, yeah. Well, she doesn't like any of the other action movies, but she, I remember I was sick with the flu in about grade 2, which would have been the time that First Blood Part 2 came out. And she'd rented out that one. It was a well-worn one with that red cover. Like, I remember Stallone being on there with a rocket launcher or whatever it was, and he's, you know, we watched the movie. And, of course, you got an even better cast, I personally think, in number 2, because, of course, you get Sensei Kreese in it. Along with that,
I was going to say straight away, you get the Karate Kid sort of connections.
That's right, and then you also get Murdoch. Murdoch, I'm coming for you, Murdoch.
We did say it's going to be full of a lot of bad Stallone impersonations.
Oh yeah, big time.
Don't push me.
But the strength of the first movie is that it's it's built on escalation. So obviously, each time that he's caught or has to face the police, it goes from a skirmish, or in this case, when he gets captured, it amps up each time because he's been in prison before, obviously, as a POW. And then that amps up each time. And the guy with the moustache is the one at the end of the day that deserved to be, well, to get killed. And he did. Taken. Yeah, that's right. That's all right. Shave him cold. He's tough. You know, like big bear of a dude.
You can take it.
I saw him a little while ago. I think it was in a Magnum episode because I was doing a rewatch of Magnum last year. And he pops up a couple of times on that. And even Tom Selleck didn't know what to do with that guy. He goes, he's got a mustache. I don't know what to do. What am I going to do? You know?
Mustache versus mustache battle.
That's right. But yeah, I think that's the great thing about this movie is it's like a lot of other movies with multiple henchmen. It really builds on top of it. I mean, obviously we've got a certain guy in this one with red hair from NCIS and pops up a few times. David Crusoe. It's a shame he didn't have the sunglasses. He could do the sunglass thing where he always does. He goes, right, we've found a body at the morgue. You know, like
was it his first acting job?
Yeah, it was. Also, if you look very, very neatly, folks, you can see in the scenes when the what do they call it? The National Guard, or what we call the Weekend Warriors out here in Australia. That's what we have out here. These guys, the Nashos, turn up and they go out into the bush. And if you look very carefully, you will see Captain Pike from the rebooted Star Trek. And you go, should we be shooting him, boss? You know,
I hope you've enjoyed part one of our chat here on Lee the Mullet Podcast on Rambo, First Blood. And, of course, we'll be having Martin Wood back for part two, which will be out next Monday. So catch us on fpnet.podbean.com on the master feed, along with all the other great shows. And make sure you subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, or anywhere where you can find a good podcast. I'm Adam O'Brien. We'll catch you next week. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.